Long ago, in a galaxy far, far away, a would-be emperor rose to power, seized power. In the chamber of what had been the Senate, he declared that the Republic was now to be ruled by force with himself as the dictator. He had overthrown the enemies, the Jedi. And as the chamber erupted, one of the Republic's most fervent supporters observed, "So this is how liberty dies," with thunderous applause. It is often thus in our own time and our own galaxy as well. And this is why, in this walk through our benediction, line by line, a 10-part lesson in how to fight totalitarianism when we see it arising around us, there are at least two principles we have to balance. One has gotten a lot of attention from me in the last few weeks, and that is not to demonize others and to keep our hearts and our ears open to all the complexity within the people whose positions we oppose fervently. That's the one hand. And the other hand is to fervently proclaim what we, in this moment, and the best that we have been able to determine, believe is true and right. On February 27th, 1933, a fire overtook the German parliament building, the Reichstag. This blow to democracy created a crisis to which the government responded the next day with another, harsher one. It imposed martial law, suspending citizens' rights, such as the right not to be detained without charge. 5 days after that, the frightened people voted the Nazi Party into power over parliament. And 18 days after that, the new parliament passed an act which enabled Adolf Hitler to rule by decree. Bits and pieces here are quotes, and the book I am referring to today is On Tyranny by Timothy Snyder, which I recommend. The very institutions that Hitler and his party disabled cheered his victory, and the very people whose power and rights he took away, in many cases, applauded thunderously. They did not regain their democracy until 12 years had passed and 80 million people had perished. But Snyder and other historians and political theorists want us to know it didn't have to be that way. It wasn't inevitable. It wasn't the only way for the story to unfold. And while history never exactly repeats itself, certain phenomena come up again and again, and we can look at other possibilities for how the story might unfold, how we might help the story to unfold by standing up, like those neighbors of Isaac who suffered anti-Semitism. That was in Billings, Montana, as Kat said, a real story. Other ways the story can play out. In South Korea, just this week, we saw a leader who was under pressure, accused of corruption, and opposed by a majority in the parliament, declare martial law. He called the opposition party's elected representatives a den of criminals and surrounded the parliament building with heavily armed soldiers. In defiance of martial law, thousands of people acted as if they still had their rights. Which they did, because rights are something a government can honor or violate, but it can neither grant them nor take them away. The people of South Korea have the right to speak openly about their government, and thousands of them poured out to do that. What a moment. Congress is surrounded by armed guards. The Constitution has been suspended. You don't have a right to a lawyer, to speak freely. You can be taken off to jail and not heard from again. And you go there and protest. Respect. They poured into the grounds of the National Assembly. And one woman grabbed the barrel of the gun a soldier was pointing at her. He ordered her to move. But she remained planted in place, shouting, "Aren't you ashamed of yourself?" This image, the bulk of this young, large, armed, armored soldier turning away, and the slim, middle-aged woman without a helmet, without a weapon, just a suit like you'd wear to your job in the assembly, holding her ground. That's something to hold on to. It's not people in a story or a movie. It's not people decades ago who it's hard to even remember that they were just real ordinary people making decisions as their government went crazy. It was in our world, a nation just like ours, a few days ago. I suppose it's possible for a would-be dictator to take power and suspend or end democracy through sheer force. I suppose, but it isn't what's happened in any case that I can think of. A dictator is just one person, after all, to terminate the rights of millions. He needs the cooperation of a cabinet, elected officials loyal to him instead of to his nation's constitution, a military that likewise forgets to whom they have sworn their fealty, and the approval, or at least capitulation, of a lot of the people. Resistance at any step of the way could be enough to defeat his plans. What's scary is that we don't know when that will be. Could have been a massacre there in Seoul. That young man could have shot that woman dead or struck her hard across the face. He turned away. So it takes courage, as we spoke of last week. In South Korea, the soldiers tried to keep the opposition party from taking their seats, but they voted anyway, some climbing the fence just to get to their seats and speak their ayes and nays. And then we watched, we waited. We didn't know what would happen between exchanges like that one that was caught on video. We didn't know whether Yoon would obey or defy. The law was, as we were rapidly being filled in on such issues as South Korean constitution and law, that he had to yield once the opposition, the parliament voted. No, no martial law. We overruled the president. Well, was he going to back down? The firmness of the people helped turn the tide there. They could have signaled that he had their support, and I'm sure he had some. But enough spoke out, laid their lives on the line, or just protested from wherever they were, to declare their opposition. And so he surrendered. And the democracy lives another day. So what does it take to resist totalitarianism and turn it back? Well, guides such as Timothy Snyder's are useful. He is distilling much of what he's observed in mostly in 20th century Europe and around the world, and also distilling the teachings of one of the great observers of totalitarianism and political theorist Hannah Arendt. And it's clear that one of the things that makes a difference, one of the things that turns totalitarianism away, even when the guns are on its side, is people who do what we urge ourselves to do every week when we take hands at the end of the service. Hold fast to what is good. The people in South Korea this week, they knew not just what they were against, but what they were for. They knew what they valued, and they held on to it tight. So this is a moment to recall our meditation from before the anthem and what core value came to you. There are lots of good ones. We don't all have the same thing in our mind right now. So again, in the privacy of your own imagination, I'd like you to activate that core value. I'll give you some let's supposes. Let's supposes that I wish were very far-fetched, but sadly I don't believe are. Let's suppose police come to your workplace and they demand that anyone without citizenship or visas come with them. What is your value telling you you should do? A transgender person in another state needs medical care that they can't get there. It has been cut off. It's not legal for them to access it. And they say, could I come to California? I need to stay there for some weeks to get the care I need. That core value you identified, what is it urging you to do? There's a government agency proposing to cut Medicare to the point that you or many of your neighbors, people you care about, people you've heard about, are going to lose a great deal of their health care. What does your core value tell you to do? None of this is asking for a white paper, a fully thought out political action plan. Just in your heart of hearts, you have this value that is so important to you, so important to who you are and what you want to be in the world. And here is the world. As they meet, what are you hearing? Another government agency is saying, all those mandates about vaccines that children have to have before they go to school, for example, we're going to roll those back. We have some remedies like ivermectin that we would like to use our agencies to promote, and they start doing that. What does your core value tell you to do? There's a protest somewhere. It's rowdy. Some of the people break windows, damage property, and the government sends a branch of the military to surround them, to patrol their streets. What does your core value urge you to do, to say, to be in this moment? This is where so many attempts at totalitarian rule have foundered. They have met up with people's core values. That said, each in their own way, no further. That's where it ended. And this is when it starts. This is where it starts, when we take hands, when we make the pledge, when we hold fast. So may we do.